Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Because of advances in military medicine, soldiers serving in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have survived devastating physical injuries that often leave veterans without limbs, blind, and suffering from brain injuries. And even if not physically injured, soldiers and the health professionals in the field often return to civilian life only to experience devastating anxiety and depression. PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, is highly prevalent in this population of veterans. A lack of effective treatment and support sometimes leads to suicide that is now rampant among veterans who served in the Middle East. Here to talk with us about the promising treatment and support options for these veterans are two nurses who are involved in bringing renewed attention to alternative ways to help veterans with depression and PTSD. Kathy Steele is a veteran Navy nurse at the University of Minnesota whose program of study focuses on integrative approaches or complementary approaches to helping veterans with stress and PTSD. Kathy Steele, thank you so much for joining us on Health Styles.
Thank you, Diana. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
And we have Dr. Kate Wheeler, who is a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner and a professor of nursing at Fairfield University in Connecticut, whose research and practice include the use of eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR. Quite a mouthful, Dr. Wheeler. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So let me start with Kathy Steele. Kathy, you are a veteran yourself, and you have firsthand experience with the PTSD and depression that many veterans experience. Would you share your story or the experience of someone you know with our listeners?
Yes, Diane, I'd be happy to do that. I have an immediate family member who served two tours in Iraq as a medic. And he has been back from Iraq for about 4.5 years. And in that time period, he has had friends or acquaintances, nine of them, end their lives with suicide. And they were all veterans.
They committed suicide when they returned?
Correct. The VA Healthcare Administration has provided us with 2012 statistics that 18 to 22 veterans die a day by suicide, which is, of course, an unacceptable number. And I can say from personal experience with this immediate family member that the transition that these service members go through as they come back to civilian life is not easy. It's complicated, and it takes time. This particular family member experienced some of the symptoms that many veterans experience at some level when they return, which would include it includes PTSD, depression, anxiety, insomnia, chronic pain, and whether they're formally diagnosed with these or not, the fact remains that they still experience many of these symptoms.
And I might point out that certainly we know from the Vietnam War, I'm going to assume you served there, but I know from colleagues of mine that the health professionals who are caring for the injured often suffer their own traumatic stress experience from seeing the casualties day in and day out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Kate Wheeler, so we have this problem of people coming back with depression, with anxiety. Why not just prescribe medications, antidepressants, anti-anxiety agents?
That's a good question, Diana. And the research has showed that treating PTSD with medications is not effective. One of the links, actually, to a high suicide rate are psychoactive drugs, particularly the SSRIs, which are used to treat depression. There was one study that showed 80% of people with PTSD, the vets, are given medication, and 89% of these are the SSRIs. So, you know, and all the warnings, the black box warnings, alert consumers and prescribers, you know, to the risk of suicide, yet, you know, they're liberally prescribed. So that's one problem. The other issue is that there's been some studies that have compared psychotherapy with medication and have found that one study found that the giving medication was comparable to placebo, that 60% of those given medication improved, whereas 58% of those who got placebo improved. So it kind of shows a 2% improvement on medication, which is not great.
And a placebo would be they would receive a medication, but it would be an inert substance. It wouldn't be a therapeutic substance.
Yeah, just like a sugar pill.
Yeah.
You know, so the question is, why give it at all, you know, when a sugar pill is just as effective without all the side effects? Whereas if you do therapy, 20% of people then have PTSD, in contrast to the 60% that still have PTSD after they're given medication. So medication is really not a great option, and sometimes is used to control the symptoms, but doesn't really treat anything about the underlying etiology or the cause of the depression or the PTSD.
So you've been using this EMDR. Tell us about eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Okay, it's a weird name, but it's actually been around for at least 20 years now, and it's really emerged as one of the most innovative and effective approaches to treat symptoms of PTSD. There's numerous practice guidelines that endorse EMDR, the American Psychiatric Association, the World Health Organization, SAMHSA, and
SAMHSA?
Many international,
Substance abuse and mental health agency people,
yes.
Federal government agency, yes.
The federal organization that, you know, has really got a lot of research and practice guidelines for substance abuse. And a lot of international practice guidelines. There's been over 27 randomized clinical trials on EMDR. So it's well established really throughout the world as one of the best, if not the best, things for PTSD.
What is
it,
though?
Recently it's a type of psychotherapy that has 8 phases, and it's based on 3 prongs, past, present, and future. And there's a certain protocol that you set up. Licensed mental health professionals can get trained in EMDR. There's you can Google in IMDRIA, EMDRIA, that's the International Association. And the trainings, you know, consist of several weekends and consultation. And then if you want to get certified, you get more training. But in any case, EMDR is all over the world, and you set up a protocol that essentially starts out with, you know, what the person perceives as the worst thing about whatever it is that they're upset about. So that usually you start out with an image because a lot of images and incidents are what are in the foreground when somebody comes in for treatment, particularly with PTSD. And then you ask the person what's the negative thought about themselves. You ask them what would they like to think. There's 8 different steps you go through. And then you do some kind of bilateral stimulation, usually making the eyes track back and forth horizontally for, you know, a minute or so. And the reason you're doing that is that the research has shown that that tells the brain to relax and puts the person in a physiological state of relaxation, which is exactly the opposite of what trauma does. Because when the person is in this protocol, you're setting up, you know, what is the disturbing part, and that's triggering, you know, hyperarousal and anxiety. And then you're telling the brain to relax. So what it helps to do is to process or integrate that those dysfunctional memory networks, which is what are driving the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder.
And how often?
I don't know if that explains.
How often
it.
Do you do these treatments?
Well, sometimes if somebody's just had like one terrible thing that happened, you could get EMDR and be done in a couple of sessions, and you would not be experiencing any more PTSD. The studies have shown 1 to 3 sessions for what we call single incident trauma. If someone has had like a lot of trauma from childhood and complex trauma, it might take more than a couple of sessions.
And let me just...
But it's much, much...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say it's much faster than any other therapy that, you know, I've used or that I've ever heard about. I was trained as a psychoanalyst, so that's a little slower.
For years.
This is like psychoanalysis on speed.
I see.
You know?
That's a good way to put it. Well,
yes.
Let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Styles, and we're talking today about the continuing problem of untreated, poorly treated PTSD, depression, anxiety, and returning veterans. And we are talking with two nurses who are involved in new ways of addressing this problem. We're talking with Dr. Kate Wheeler. You just heard her, a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner and professor of nursing at Fairfield University, and Kathy Steele, who is a veteran Navy nurse, and she's at the University of Minnesota, where she's got a program of study that's focused on how to use integrative approaches to health to integrative approaches to help veterans to cope with these distressing symptoms of depression and PTSD, as well as to heal. And I want to go back to you, Kathy Steele, and just bring back in that report, the VA report that was just released based on 2012 data. Given what Dr. Wheeler just talked about in terms of EMDR being something that can work in a couple sessions, if it was just the trauma war and you didn't have this history of trauma and stress, that report suggested that indeed many of these vets are going to need more than just a few sessions. Is that correct?
That's true. It's looking at the whole person, a whole person approach, and first of all, making sure that their primary needs are met when they make this transition back, so that you're sure they have food, safety, shelter. Those survival needs are met, because many of them are coming back, perhaps to no job when they transition back into civilian life. So that's meeting those survival skills. And the next step is then to how do we help them thrive, not just survive but thrive. And so when we look as providers, healthcare providers, we look at the different therapies that might be an option, and EMDR is one of those that's used very successfully. Cognitive behavioral therapy is another one. But we also want to look at how we can empower, at the same time that they're doing therapies and they're seeing their providers, how can we empower these veterans and their family members to deal with stress across the stress continuum. And so what I have been studying in my Doctorate of Nursing Practice program at the University of Minnesota is how we can utilize things like nutritional counseling, guided imagery, yoga, as in the movement yoga, and also like eye rest yoga nidra, which is a meditative kind of yoga that the military is successfully using for veterans with PTSD or military members with PTSD, things like journaling, mindfulness training, aromatherapies. Those are all options that should be and can be on the table for veterans and their families.
So can you get access to these therapies and these approaches through the VA, or do you need to go to a private practitioner in the community or a clinic or what have you?
Well, great question, Diana. It's the answer is yes to both. There are some VAs who are offering some of these integrated services. The problem is that it's not consistent system-wide, and it also means that the veterans can't just sign up for these classes. They have to be vectored into these classes and courses through their primary care providers, so they have to be able to get to their primary care provider and then get vectored into the courses. Other veterans who are not within the VA system or are not eligible or who are not utilizing the VA system then have to seek these therapies in the civilian world on the outside and pay for it out of pocket.
Mm-hmm. So that's a real challenge and one that we need to do a better job of addressing. So
that's
there's
correct.
Also this idea that we need to build supportive families, friends, communities for these returning vets to help them through what's a very difficult time. And I wondered if the two of you could give some examples of that you know of that can be held up for others to model or to emulate and replicate. Kathy Steele, why don't we start with you?
Absolutely.
Kate, it's hard to keep us straight, but I just wanted to address for a minute something Kathy said about all the adjunctive treatments that are so helpful for the vets that she's studying and that she mentioned, some of which are offered through the VA. The two level A treatments, which means, you know, treatments that are considered the best standalone treatments, are either CBT or EMDR.
Now, you say what CBT is.
Or PTSD.
We
yes,
have three acronyms, CBT, EDMR for PTSD. Let's break that down.
Well, CPT is cognitive processing therapy, and then there's prolonged exposure, which is kind of also a type of CPT. And then you have EMDR, and those are all considered by all the practice guidelines the best level A, you know, treatments for post-traumatic stress disorder. And then there's a lot of other things that help that are not considered level A treatments. But the problem that has happened with the VA is that they do not train any of their clinicians in EMDR. They do not do research in EMDR. That the Congressional Budget Office report of 2011 reported that the primary modality that they have their therapists learn is cognitive processing therapy and prolonged exposure. And both of those have a 40% dropout rate. And from what I've seen and what the folks that work at the VA tell me, the other psych nurse practitioners, that the guys don't really like these therapies that much because they give them homework, and prolonged exposure is very hard to go through because you have to suffer, you know, to kind of be exposed to the trauma over and over again till it loses its punch. So the issue is really how to get the VA to use all the level A evidence-based treatments, which right now they are not doing, and that would include EMDR.
Well, and I appreciate the point you're raising about level A evidence, but let me push back a little bit on that, and that is that I would suspect that there's not been much funded research devoted to rigorous studies of some of the other therapies and integrative approaches that Kathy Steele was talking about. Or, Kathy, is there strong evidence? Are there randomized clinical trials of some of the aromatherapies and the yoga, et cetera, with veterans?
Right. There is now some stronger empirical research. And the Samueli Institute, which is a nonprofit institute, has been doing a lot of research on some of these targeted therapies and combining some of these targeted therapies with active duty military participants in large numbers. So there is empirical evidence to indicate that some of these are very therapeutic and usable. The other thing that I might add too, you mentioned, Diana, that it takes support from the family and communities,
yes.
And I would certainly say that that's true. And I know that there are incidences in every town of people reaching out to veterans. What I have seen here in the Minneapolis area is that there are veterans now who are reaching out to other veterans. And this is a really strong approach because veterans trust other vets, whereas they may not trust civilian providers or organizations as much. So veterans are reaching out in different ways to other veterans. For example, one young veteran decided that he was going to with help, he purchased a van, and he is now picking up other veterans to take them to appointments or take them to job interviews. So that's one example of a veteran doing something for others. There, as a community and as nationwide, there is an organization called Team Red, White, and Blue. And this organization was founded to promote the idea that one of the ways we can help veterans as they transition back is to increase their physical fitness and their brain fitness. And so this organization brings community members together in that venue along with veterans, and they provide runs, activities, walks, yoga classes, gym time, all of those things together as a community, surrounding veterans and supporting veterans. And there, it's a great organization.
And there's a really compelling video that you sent me the link to on YouTube. If you go on YouTube and search for Team Red, White, and Blue, you'll probably find
yes.
it. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, we're out of time, and I want to thank both of you for coming on. This is such an important discussion. It's very distressing to know that we have a veteran committing suicide almost every hour of every day in this country. It is unacceptable, and we must do better. And I want to thank you, Dr. Kate Wheeler, a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner and professor of nursing at Fairfield University, for enlightening us, particularly around EMDR, the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and for the work that you're doing around this area. Thank you for being on Health Styles.
Thank you so much, Diana.
And Kathy Steele, a veteran Navy nurse and who is studying at the University of Minnesota, looking at integrative approaches to helping these returning veterans. Thank you for the good work that you are doing, Kathy, and for being on Health Styles. It's really important work.
Thank you. It was my pleasure to be with you today.
So for listeners, I hope that you will think about what kind of a community do you live in, how supportive is it for our veterans, and look at what you might do to create a more supportive environment. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Health Styles. This program is brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. You can follow us online on our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in.